Chapter 15. Use a Pebble. Nynaeve hastened through the paved streets of Tyr, the Ashaman Naif at her side. She could still feel that storm to the north, distant but terrible, unnatural, and it was moving southward. Lan was up there. "Light protect him," she whispered.
"What was that, Nynaeve Sedai?" Naif asked.
"Nothing." Nynaeve was getting used to having the black-coated men around. She did not feel an uncomfortable chill when she looked at Naif. That would be silly. Sidene had been cleansed with her own help. No need to be uncomfortable. Even if the Ashaman did sometimes stare off into nothing, muttering to themselves, like Naif, who was looking into the shadow of a nearby building, hand on his sword.
"Careful, Nynaeve Sedai," he said. "There's another Murdral following us."
"You're certain, Naif?" The tall, rectangular-faced man nodded. He was talented with weaves, particularly air, which was unusual for a man, and he was very polite to Aes Sedai, unlike some of the other Ashaman.
"Yes, I'm certain," he said. "I don't know why I can see them and others cannot. I must have a talent for it. They hide in shadows. Scouts of some sort, I think. They haven't struck yet. I think they're wary because they know I can see them."
He'd taken to night walks through the Stone of Tyr, watching the Murdral that only he could see. His madness wasn't getting worse, but old injuries wouldn't go away. He'd always bear this scar. Poor man. At least his madness wasn't as bad as some of the others. Nynaeve looked forward, marching down the wide paved street. Buildings passed on either side, designed in Tyr's haphazard way. A large mansion, with two small towers and a bronze gate-like door, sat beside an inn of only modest size. Across from them was a row of homes with wrought iron worked into the doors and windows, but a butcher's shop had been built right in the middle of the line. Nynaeve and Naif were heading for the All Summers neighborhood, which was just inside the western wall. It wasn't the richest section of Tyr, but it was definitely prosperous. Of course, in Tyr there was really only one division, commoner or noble. Many of the nobles still considered commoners completely different and wholly inferior creatures. They passed some of those commoners. Men in loose breeches tied at the ankles, colorful sashes at the waist. Women in high-necked dresses, pale aprons hanging at the front. Wide straw hats with flat tops were common, or cloth caps that hung to one side. Many people carried clogs on a string over their shoulders to use once they returned to the mall. The people passing Nynaeve now wore worried faces, some glancing over their shoulders in fear. A bubble of evil had hit the city in that direction. Light send that not too many were hurt, for she didn't have much time to spare. She had to return to the White Tower. It galled her to have to obey Egwene, but obey she would, and leave as soon as Rand returned. He'd gone somewhere this morning, insufferable man. At least he'd taken maidens with him. He'd reportedly said he needed to fetch something. Nynaeve quickened her step, Naif at her side, until they were nearly running. A gateway would have been faster, but it wouldn't be safe. She couldn't be certain they wouldn't slice into someone. "We're growing too dependent on those gateways," she thought. "Our own feet hardly seem good enough anymore." They turned a corner into a street where a group of nervous defenders, wearing black coats and silvery breastplates, black and gold sleeves puffing out at the sides, stood in a line. They parted for her and Naif, and while they looked relieved that she'd arrived, they still clutched their pole arms nervously. The city beyond them looked faintly blander than it should. Washed out. The paving stones were a lighter shade of gray, the walls of the buildings a fainter brown or gray than they should have been. "You have men inside searching for wounded?" Nynaeve asked.
One of the defenders shook his head. "We've been keeping people out, Lady Aes Sedai. It's not safe."
Most Tyrans still weren't accustomed to showing Aes Sedai respect. Until recently, channeling had been outlawed in the city. "Send your men to search," Nynaeve said firmly. "The Lord Dragon will be upset if your timidity costs lives. Start at the perimeter. Send for me if you find anyone I can help. The guardsman moved off. Nynaeve turned to Nafe, and he nodded. She turned and took a step into the affected section of town. When her foot hit the paving stone, the stone turned to dust. Her foot sank through the shattered paving stone and hit packed earth. She looked down, feeling a chill. She continued forward, and the stones fell to powder as she touched them. She and Nafe made their way to a nearby building, leaving a trail of powdered rock behind. The building was an inn with nice balconies on the second floor, delicate ironwork patterns on the glass windows, and a darkly stained porch. The door was open, and as she lifted her foot up to step onto the low porch, the boards also turned to powder. She froze, looking down. Nafe stepped up beside her, then knelt down, pinching the dust between his fingers.
"It's soft," he said quietly. "As fine a powder as I've ever touched."
The air smelled unnaturally fresh, contrasting strangely with the silent street. Nynaeve took a deep breath, then went into the inn. She had to push forward, walking with the wooden floor at her knees, the boards disintegrating as she touched them. The inside was dim. The stand lamps no longer burned. People sat about the room, frozen in mid-motion. Most were nobles with fine clothing, the men wearing beards oiled to a point. One sat at a nearby tall table with long-legged chairs. He had a mug of morning ale halfway to his lips. He was motionless, his mouth open to accept the drink. Nafe's face was grim, although little seemed to surprise or unsettle Ashaman. As he took another step forward, Nynaeve lunged and grabbed his arm. He frowned at her and she pointed down. Right in front of him, barely visible beneath the still-whole floorboards right ahead of them, the ground fell away. He'd been about to step into the inn's cellar.
"Light," Nafe said, stepping back.
He knelt down, then tapped the board in front of him. It fell to dust, showering down into the dark cellar below. Nynaeve wove spirit, air, and water to delve the man sitting at the chair near her. Normally she would touch someone to delve them, but she hesitated this time. It would work without touch, but it would not be as effective for healing. Her delving found nothing. No life, no sense that he had ever been alive. His body wasn't even flesh. With a sinking feeling, she delved other people in the darkened room. A serving maid carrying breakfast toward three Andoran merchants. A corpulent innkeeper who must have had trouble navigating between the close-set tables. A woman in a rich dress sitting in the very back of the room, primly reading a small book. There was no life in any of them. These weren't corpses. They were husks. Fingers trembling, Nynaeve reached out and brushed the shoulder of the man at the high table. He immediately fell to powder, dust showering downward in a puff. The chair and floorboards underneath did not dissolve.
"There is nobody here to save," Nynaeve said. "Poor people," Nafe said. "Light shelter their souls."
Nynaeve often had trouble feeling pity for the Tyran nobles. Of all the people she had met, they seemed among the most arrogant. But nobody deserved this. Besides, a large number of the commoners had been caught in this bubble as well. She and Nafe made their way out of the building, Nynaeve's frustration mounting as she tugged on her braid. She hated feeling helpless. Like with the poor guard who had started the fire back at the manor house in Arad Doman, or the people who were struck down by strange diseases. The dusty husks this day. What was the good of learning to heal if she couldn't help people? And now she had to leave. Go back to the White Tower. It felt like running away. She turned to Nafe. "Wind," she said.
"Nynaeve Sedai?"
"Give the building a gust of wind, Nafe," she said. "I want to see what happens." The Ashaman did as she asked, his invisible weaves blowing a jet of air. The entire building burst, shattering into dust that blew away like the white seeds of a dandelion flower. Nafe turned to her.
How wide did they say this bubble was? She asked.
About 2 streets wide in all directions.
We need more wind, she said, beginning a weave. Create a gust as large as you can. If there is anyone wounded in here, we'll find them this way.
Naif nodded. The two of them strode forward, creating wind. They shattered buildings, causing them to burst and fall. Naif was far more skilled at the process than she, but Nynaeve was stronger in the one power. Together they swept the crumbling buildings, stones and husks before them in a dust storm. It was exhausting work, but they kept at it. She hoped, against reason, that she might find someone to help. Buildings fell before her and Naif, the dust getting caught in swirling air. They pushed the dust in a circle, moving inward, like a woman sweeping the floor. They passed people frozen on the streets in mid-stride, oxen pulling a cart. Heart-wrenchingly, some children playing in an alley. All fell to dust. They found nobody alive. Eventually, she and Naif had dissolved all of the broken part of the city and blown the dust into the center. Nynaeve looked at it, kept swirling in place by a small cyclone Naif had woven. Curious, Nynaeve channeled a tongue of fire into the cyclone, and the dust caught alight. Nynaeve gasped. That dust went up like dried paper thrown into a fire, creating a roaring tempest of flames. She and Naif backed away, but it was over in a flash. It didn't leave any ash behind. If we hadn't gathered it, she thought, watching the fire fade away, someone might have dropped a candle on it. A fire like that. Naif stilled his winds. The two of them stood in the center of an open circle of bare earth with periodic holes for cellars. On the edges, buildings had been sliced into, rooms open to the air, some structures having collapsed. It was eerie to see this hollow area, like a gouged-out eye socket in an otherwise healthy face. Several groups of defenders stood at the perimeter. She nodded to Naif and they walked to the largest group. "You didn't find anyone?" she demanded.
"No, Lady Aes Sedai," a man said. "Well, we did find a few, but they were dead already."
Another man nodded, a barrel-like fellow whose uniform was very tight.
"Seems anyone who had even a toe inside of that ring fell dead. Found a few of them missing only a foot or part of their arm. But they were dead anyway."
The man shuddered visibly. Nynaeve closed her eyes. The entire world was falling apart, and she was powerless to heal it. She felt sick and angry.
"Maybe they caused it," Naif said softly.
She opened her eyes to see him nodding toward the shadows of a building nearby.
"The Fades. There are 3 of them there, Nynaeve Sedai, watching us."
"Naif," she said, frustrated. Telling him the Fades weren't real didn't help. "I have to do something," she thought. "Help someone. Naif, stand still." She took hold of his arm and delved him. He looked at her, surprised, but didn't object. She could see the madness, like a dark network of veins digging into his mind. It seemed to pulse, like a small beating heart. She'd found similar corruption recently in other Ashaman. Her skill with delving was improving, her weaves more refined, and she could find things once hidden to her. She had no idea how to fix what was wrong, though. "Anything should be healable," she told herself. "Anything but death itself." She concentrated, weaving all 5 powers, and carefully prodded at the madness, remembering what had happened when she'd removed the compulsion from Grendel's unfortunate servant. Naif was better off with this madness than he would be if she damaged his mind further. Oddly, the darkness did seem similar to compulsion. Was that what the taint had done? Bent the men who used the one power with the Dark One's own compulsion? She carefully wove a counterweave opposite the madness, then laid it over Naif's mind. The weave just faded away, doing nothing. She gritted her teeth. That should have worked. But, as seemed so common lately,
It had failed. No, she thought. No, I can't just sit back. She delved deeper. The darkness had tiny, thorn-like projections stuck into Nafe's mind. She ignored the people gathering around her and inspected those thorns. She carefully used weaves of spirit to pry one free. It came out with some resistance, and she quickly healed the spot where it had punctured Nafe's flesh. The brain seemed to pulse, looking more healthy. One by one, she pried the others free. She was forced to maintain her weaves, holding the barbs back lest they plunge down again. She began to sweat. She was already tired from sweeping the area clean, and no longer could spare concentration to keep the heat off her. Tear was so muggy. She continued working, preparing another counterweave. Once she had pried up each and every thorn, she released her new weave. The dark patch undulated and shook like something alive. Then it vanished. Nynaeve stumbled back, drained near to exhaustion. Nafe blinked, then looked around. He raised a hand to his head. Light, she thought. Did I hurt him? I shouldn't have barreled into that. I could have...
They're gone, Nafe said. The fades. I can't see them anymore.
He blinked.
Why would fades be hiding in the shadows anyway? If I could see them, they'd have killed me and...
He looked at her, focusing.
What did you do?
I think I just healed your madness.
Well, she'd done something to it.
What she'd done hadn't been any standard healing and hadn't even used healing weaves. But it had worked, it seemed. Nafe smiled deeply, seeming bewildered. He took her hand with both of his, then knelt before her, growing teary-eyed.
For months, I have felt as if I were always being watched, as if I would be murdered the moment I turned my back on the shadows. Now I... Thank you. I need to go find Nelevere.
Off with you then, Nynaeve said. Nafe left her in a dash, running back toward the stone to search out his Aes Sedai. I can't let myself begin to think that nothing I do matters. That's what the Dark One wants. As she watched Nafe hasten away, she noticed that the clouds above were breaking. Rand had returned. Workers began clearing away the rubble of buildings that had half turned to dust, and Nynaeve ended up speaking soothingly to the worried Tyrans who began to cluster around the perimeter. She didn't want there to be a panic. She assured everyone that the danger was past, and then she asked to meet with any families who had lost someone. She was still doing this, talking softly with a thin, worried woman, when Rand found her. The woman was a commoner, wearing a high-neck dress with three aprons and a straw hat. Her husband had worked in the inn Nynaeve had entered. The woman kept glancing at the hole in the ground that had been the cellar. After a moment, Nynaeve noticed Rand, watching her and standing with his arms behind his back, hand clasping his stump. Two maidens guarded him, a pair of women named Soma and Kanara. Nynaeve finished speaking with the Tyran, but the woman's tearful eyes wrenched her heart. How would she react if she lost Lan? Light, protect him. Please, please protect him, she prayed. She unhooked her coin pouch and sent the woman off with it. Perhaps that would help. Rand stepped up to Nynaeve.
You care for my people. Thank you.
I care for any who need it, Nynaeve said.
As you've always done, Rand said, along with caring for some who don't need it.
Like you? She said, raising an eyebrow.
No, I've always needed it. That and more.
Nynaeve hesitated. That wasn't something she'd ever expected him to admit. Why hadn't he gotten rid of that old cloak? It was faded and dull.
This is my fault, Rand said, nodding toward the hole in the city.
Rand, don't be a fool.
I don't know if anyone can avoid being a fool at times, he said. I blame myself because of my delays.
We've been putting off the confrontation with him for too long. What happened here today? The buildings turned to dust?
Yes, Nynaeve said. Their substance was removed. Everything crumbled the moment we touched it.
He would do this to the entire world, Rand said, his voice growing soft. He stirs. The longer we wait, holding on by our fingernails, the more he destroys what remains. We can delay no longer.
Nynaeve frowned. But Rand, if you let him free, won't that make it even worse?
Perhaps for a short burst, Rand said. Opening the boar will not free him immediately, though it will give him more strength. It must be done regardless. Think of our task as climbing a tall stone wall. Unfortunately, we are delaying, running laps before attempting the climb. Each step tires us for the fight to come. We must face him while still strong. That is why I must break the seals.
Nynaeve said. I think I actually believe you.
She was surprised to realize it. Do you, Nynaeve? He asked, sounding oddly relieved. Do you really?
I do.
Then try to convince Egwene. She will stop me if she can.
Rand, she has called me back to the tower. I'll need to go today.
Rand looked saddened. Well, I suspected that she might do that eventually.
He took Nynaeve by the shoulder in an odd gesture.
Don't let them ruin you, Nynaeve. They'll try.
Ruin me?
Your passion is part of you, Rand said. I tried to be like them, though I wouldn't have admitted it. Cold, always in control, it nearly destroyed me. That is strength to some, but it is not the only type of strength. Perhaps you could learn to control yourself a little more, but I like you as you are. It makes you genuine. I would not see you become another perfect Aes Sedai with a painted mask of a face and no care for the feelings and emotions of others.
To be Aes Sedai is to be calm, Nynaeve replied.
To be Aes Sedai is to be what you decide it is, Rand said, his stump still held behind his back. Moiraine cared. You could see it in her, even when she was calm. The best Aes Sedai I've known are the ones who others complain aren't what an Aes Sedai should be.
Nynaeve found herself nodding, then was annoyed at herself. She was taking advice from Rand Althor? There was something different about Rand now. Quiet intensity and careful words. He was a man you could take advice from without feeling he was speaking down to you. Like his father, actually. Not that she'd ever admit that to either one of them.
Go to Egwene, Rand said, releasing her shoulder. But when you can, I would like it very much if you returned to me. I will need your counsel again. At the very least, I would like you by my side as I go to Sheol Ghul. I cannot defeat him with Sidine alone. And if we are going to use Kalendor, I will need two women I trust in the circle with me. I've not decided upon the other. Avienda or Elaine, perhaps. But you for certain.
I will be there, Rand. She felt oddly proud. Hold still for a moment. I won't hurt you, I promise. He raised an eyebrow, but did nothing as she delved him. She was so tired. But if she was going to leave him, she needed to take this opportunity to heal his madness. It seemed suddenly the most important thing she could do for him, and for the world. She delved, staying away from the wounds at his side, which were pits of darkness that seemed to try to suck in her energy. She kept her attention on his mind. Where was the... She stiffened. The darkness was enormous, covering the entirety of his mind. Thousands upon thousands of the tiny black thorns pricked into his brain. But beneath them was a brilliant white lacing of something. A white radiance like liquid power. Light given form and life. She gasped. It coated each of the dark tines, driving into his mind alongside them. What did it mean? She didn't have any idea how to begin working on this. There were so many barbs. How could he even think with that much darkness pressing against his brain? And what had created the whiteness? She'd healed Rand before and hadn't noticed it then. Of course, she'd never seen the darkness before recently. Her practice with delving was likely the reason. She reluctantly withdrew. "I'm sorry," she said. "I can't heal you."
"Many have tried on those wounds, you yourself included. They are simply unhealable. I don't think on them much these days."
"Not the wounds in your side," Nynaeve said. "The madness. I..."
"You can heal madness?"
"I think I did so in Nafe."
Rand grinned widely. "You never cease to..." "Nynaeve, do you realize that the most talented of healers during the Age of Legends had difficulty with diseases of the mind? Many believed it was not possible to heal madness with the one power."
"I'll heal the others," she said. "Narishma, Flynn, at the least, before I go. All of the Ashaman probably have at least a hint of this taint upon their minds. I don't know if I'll be able to get to the Black Tower.
Or if I want to go there."
"Thank you," Rand said, looking northward. "But no, you shouldn't go to the Black Tower. I will need to send someone there, but it will be handled carefully. Something's happening with them. But I have so much to do."
He shook his head, then looked to her.
"That is one pit I cannot cross at the moment. Speak well of me to Egwene. I need her to be an ally."
Nynaeve nodded, then, feeling foolish, gave him a hug before hurrying off to seek out Narishma and Flynn. A hug. For the dragon reborn. She was turning as silly as Elaine. She shook her head, thinking that perhaps some time in the White Tower would help her regain her level-headedness. The clouds had returned. Egwene stood at the very apex of the White Tower, on the flat circular roof, holding to the waist-high railing. Like a creeping fungus, like insects in a swarm, the clouds had closed up above Tar Valon. The sunlight's visit had been welcome, but brief. The tea was back to tasting stale again. The grain stores they'd discovered were running out, and the next sacks to come in had been filled with weevils. The land is one with the dragon. She breathed in, smelling the new air, looking out over Tar Valon. Her Tar Valon. Saeryn, Yukiri, and Siayne, three of the sisters who had been the original hunters for the Black Adra in the tower, waited patiently behind her. They were among her most ardent supporters now, and her most useful. Everyone expected Egwene to favor the women who had been among those who split from Elaida, so being seen spending time with Aes Sedai who had stayed in the White Tower was helpful. "What have you discovered?" Egwene asked. Saeryn shook her head, joining Egwene at the railing. The scar on her cheek and the white at her temples made the olive-skinned and blunt-faced brown look like an aging general. "Some of the information you requested was uncertain even 3,000 years ago, Mother." "Whatever you can give me will help, daughter," Egwene said. "So long as we do not depend on the facts entirely, incomplete knowledge is better than complete ignorance."
Saeryn snorted softly, but obviously recognized the quote from Yasika Selaich, an ancient brown scholar.
"And you too?"
Egwene asked Yukiri and Siayne.
"We're looking," Yukiri said. "Siayne has a list of possibilities. Some are actually reasonable."
Egwene raised an eyebrow. Asking a white for theories was always interesting, but not always useful. They had a tendency to ignore what was plausible, focusing on remote possibilities.
"Let us begin there, then," Egwene said. "Siayne?"
"Well," Siayne said, "I will begin by saying that one of the Forsaken undoubtedly has knowledge that we can't guess at, so there may be no way to ascertain how she defeated the Oathrod. For instance, there might be a way to disable it for a short time, or perhaps there are special words that can be used to evade its effects. The rod is a thing of the age of legends, and though we've used it for millennia, we don't really understand it, no more than we do most Tarangreal. Very well, Egwene said. But, Ciane said, getting out a sheet of paper. That taken into account, I have three theories on how one might defeat swearing on the rod. First, it is possible that the woman has another oath rod. Others were once said to exist, and it's plausible that one rod could release you from the oaths of another. Messaana could have been holding one secretly. She could have taken the three oaths while holding our rod, then somehow used the other to negate those oaths before swearing that she was not a dark friend. Tenuous, Egwene said. How would she have released herself without us knowing? It requires channeling spirit. I considered that, Ciane said.
Not surprising, Yukiri said.
Ciane eyed her, then continued. This is the reason Messaana would have needed a second oath rod. She could have channeled spirit into it, then inverted the weave, leaving her linked to it. It seems improbable, Egwene said.
Improbable, Saren replied. It seems ridiculous. I thought you said some of these were plausible, Yukiri.
This one is the least likely of the three, Ciane said. The second method would be easier. Messaana could have sent a lookalike wearing a mirror of mists, some unfortunate sister, or novice, or even some untrained woman who could channel under heavy compulsion. This woman could have been forced to take the oaths in Masana's place. Then, since this person wouldn't be a dark friend, she could speak truthfully that she wasn't. Egwene nodded thoughtfully. That would have taken a lot of preparation.
From what I've been able to learn about her, Saren said, Messaana was good at preparation. She excelled at it.
Saren's task had been to discover whatever she could about Messaana's true nature. They had all heard the stories. Who didn't know the names of each of the Forsaken and their most terrible deeds by heart? But Egwene put little faith in stories. She wanted something more hard fast, if she could get it.
You said there was a third possibility? Egwene asked.
Yes, Ciane said. We know that some weaves play with sound. Variations on vocal weaves are used to enhance a voice to project to a crowd, and in the ward against eavesdropping. Indeed, they're used in the various tricks used to listen in on what is being said nearby. Complex uses of the Mirror of Mists weave can change a person's voice. With some practice, Doacine and I were able to fabricate a variation on a weave that would alter the words we spoke. In effect, we said one thing, but the other person heard another thing entirely.
Dangerous ground to walk, Ciane, Saren said, her voice gruff. That is the kind of weave that could be used for ill purposes.
I couldn't use it to lie, Ciane said. I tried. The oaths hold. So long as the weave was there, I couldn't speak words that I knew another would hear as lies, even if they were truth when they left my lips. Regardless, it was an easy weave to develop. Tied off and inverted, it hung in front of me and altered my words in a way I'd indicated. Theoretically, if Messaana had this weave in force, she could have taken up the oath rod and sworn whatever she wished. I vow that I will lie whenever I feel like it, for instance. The oath rod would have bound her with that vow, but the weaves would have changed the sounds in the air as they passed her lips. We'd have heard her saying the proper oaths.
Egwene gritted her teeth. She'd assumed that defeating the oath rod would be difficult, and yet here was a simple weave capable of the feat. She should have known, never use a boulder when a pebble will do, as her mother had often said.
With this, Egwene said, they could have been slipping dark friends into the ranks of the Aes Sedai for years.
Unlikely, Saren said. None of the Black Sisters we captured knew of this weave. If they had, then they'd have tried to use it when we made them re-swear the oaths. I suspect that if Messaana does know this trick, she has kept it to herself. The usefulness of it would vanish once too many people became aware of it.
Still, Egwene said, what do we do? Knowing of the weave, we could probably find a way to check for it, but I doubt that the sisters would be willing to go through the re-swearing process again.
And if it were to catch one of the Forsaken? Yukiri asked. It might be worth ruffling a few feathers to catch the fox hiding in the henhouse.
She wouldn't be caught, Egwene said. Besides, we don't know if she's using one of these methods. Siane's logic suggests that it might be possible, without too much trouble, to defeat the Oathrod. The actual method Masana used is less important than the possibility of the act.
Siane glanced at Yukiri. None of the three had questioned Egwene's knowledge that one of the Forsaken was in the White Tower, but she knew they'd been skeptical. Well, at least they now understood that it might be possible to defeat the Oathrod.
I want you to continue your work, Egwene said. You and the others were effective at capturing several Black Sisters and unearthing the ferrets. This is much the same thing.
Merely far, far more dangerous.
We'll try, Mother, Yukiri said. But one sister among hundreds? One of the most crafty and evil creatures ever to have lived? I doubt she will leave many clues. Our investigations into the murders have so far yielded very little in the way of results.
Keep at it anyway, Egwene said. Saren, what have you to report?
Tales, rumors, and whispers, Mother, Saren said with a grimace. You likely know the most famous stories regarding Masana, how she ran the schools in lands conquered by the Shadow during the War of Power. So far as I can tell, those legends are quite true. Marsim of Manetheran speaks of that in detail in her Annals of the Final Nights, and she's often a reliable source. Alram gathered quite a full report of living through one of those schools, and fragments of it have survived. Messana wished to be a researcher, but was rejected. The details are not clear. She also governed the Aes Sedai who went to the Shadow, leading them in battle at times, if Alram's report is to be believed. I'm not convinced it is. I think it likely Masana's leadership was more figurative.
Egwene nodded slowly. But what of her personality? Who is she?
Saren shook her head. The Forsaken are more monsters in the night than real personalities to most, Mother, and much has been lost or misquoted. From what I can tell, among the Forsaken you could think of her as the realist, the one who, rather than sitting high on a throne, steps in and gets her hands dirty. Elandria Borndat's Seeing Through the Breaking insists that, unlike Mogadine and Grendal, Messana was willing to take the reins directly. She was never known as the most skilled or powerful of the Forsaken, but she was extremely capable. Elandria explains that she did what needed to be done. When others would be scheming, she would be carefully building up defenses and training new recruits.
Saren hesitated.
Well, she sounds much like an Ammerlin, Mother. The Shadow's Ammerlin.
Light, Yukiri said. Little wonder she's set up here.
The Grey seemed very unsettled by that.
The only other thing I could find of relevance, Mother, Saren said, was a curious reference from the blue scholar Lannis, who indicated that Messana was second only to Demondred in sheer anger.
Egwene frowned.
I'd assume that all of the Forsaken are full of hate. Not hate, Saren said. Anger. Lannis thought Messana was angry at herself, at the world, at the other Forsaken, because she wasn't one of those at the forefront. That could make her very dangerous.
Egwene nodded slowly. She's an organizer, she thought. An administrator who hates being relegated to that position.
Was that why she'd stayed in the tower after the Black Sisters had been found? Did she desire to bring some great accomplishment to the Dark One? Verin had said that the Forsaken shared one unifying trait, their selfishness.
She tried to deliver a broken White Tower, Egwene thought, but that has failed. She was probably part of the attempt to kidnap Rand as well. Another fiasco. And the women sent to destroy the Black Tower?
Messana would need something grand to offset so many failures. Killing Egwene would work. That might send the White Tower back into division.
Gawain had been mortified when she'd said she might use herself as bait.
Dared she do so? She gripped the railing, standing above the tower, above the city that depended on her, looking out on a world that needed her. Something had to be done. Masana had to be drawn out. If what Saren said was true, then the woman would be willing to fight directly. She wouldn't hide and poke from the shadows. Egwene's task, then, was to tempt her with an opportunity, one that didn't seem obvious, one she couldn't resist. Come, Egwene said, walking toward the ramp back down into the tower. I have some preparations to make.